Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Errol Lewis of the Daily News, sitting in for Brian. Brian will be back tomorrow. Last weekend's horrific attack by Lee Coleman, a mentally ill man who grabbed knives from a restaurant and began stabbing innocent strangers before being killed by police bullets, was a grim reminder that New York City has thousands of people in mental distress, many of them homeless. Coleman's rampage was the latest in a long line of killings by mentally ill New Yorkers, at least seven in 2006 and this year, not including Coleman. This prompted the Daily News editorial board, of which I'm a member, to call for a blue ribbon commission to look into the matter, which Governor Eliot Spitzer says he will consider. To talk more about the problem of mental illness resulting in violence, I'm now joined by Eugene O'Donnell of John Jay College. Good morning.
Good morning, Errol.
Thanks for coming on. I was struck by, and I think my colleagues on the board were too, the statistic that NYPD officers are responding to 70,000 calls for emotionally disturbed persons every year. Is that a lot?
It's a tremendous number, and the police do the best they can. But as you might imagine, they're really overmatched. This is not their area of expertise. It's not an appropriate place for them to be. And over the years, they've sort of become the default agency. Our lack of a cohesive, comprehensive mental health infrastructure, we haven't fixed anything really significantly, and so we've sort of let the police be the fix-it people in the city, and that's not tenable going forward. We need to have a comprehensive, sweeping reform, and that's why I'm suggesting, and thanks to the Daily News for helping this out, a blue ribbon panel that can actually look at the whole issue of mental health. But I want to emphasize, not in a punitive way or a criminalizing way. It's not about locking people up. It's about trying to get people care and diagnosing their issues and assisting them, and not dumping them where they are at present, which is the police, and then ultimately in jails and prisons.
This usually dovetails with a discussion about deinstitutionalization, which was, in the conventional wisdom, a reaction to abuses at places like Willowbrook and the shutting down of large and in some cases poorly run mental health facilities. And the logic or the conventional wisdom, again, holds that a lot of people who used to be patients in these institutional settings are now on the streets. Does that track with what you've seen?
Yeah, although, again, I think it's a complex issue, and we don't want to just make it out to be an issue that touches just the homeless. This is an issue for middle-class people and wealthy people. Serious mental illness is about 6% of the country. And what we did when we deinstitutionalized is we simply said, we're not going to come up with a reasonable and viable plan B. And then, as usual, we turned to the police and we said, well, you be the plan B. And it's time for people in the city to understand that has to end. The police can't be plan B. Some of these cases, no matter what the best of care, may end up with police officers having to be called. But we should see to it that that's the very smallest number of cases and that we have a humane and intelligent approach. You know, mental health is evolving. There's a lot of advances. We understand a lot more than we did in the 60s. And it's important that this city become a model where people can point to the New York City and say, this is the place that has been a laboratory for treating people humanely and decently and trying to divert them out of the criminal justice system and trying to make the cops' lives better, who have to ultimately deal with these cases, sometimes have to fatally shoot people because those people are acting out in a way that threatens others with imminent harm.
Well, what might such a system look like? We do have a public hospital system, and I believe every public hospital has an emergency psychiatric room. Psychiatric emergency room, I should say.
Right, and again, like regular health, you know, we have a national health crisis, and just now we have Congress debating whether mental health should be actually included. So that's how far behind we are. We have an awful lot of catching up to do, and one of the many things this panel could do, and this panel, of course, should be fact driven, and it should really look hard at all the and really raise the hard questions. But one of the things they can do is provide a bully pulpit on those national issues about people who need help, health care, in particular mental health care. Many of them wouldn't know where to go to get it, and even if they got it on a crisis basis, would they get it as they would undoubtedly need it over the long haul? They probably would not. They would have to rely exclusively on an emergency care. And we have situations like we have with Mr. Coleman, who his family reports was walking around for a day looking for help, and it became a police issue. Why is that a police issue? Why isn't there an alternative way, an alternative paradigm for dealing with that?
A call that went to if a call were to go to 9/11 about someone walking around for a day or two and in obvious distress, how would that call be handled at present?
Well, it's a very hard thing because, again, the police don't have the diagnostic skills. And honestly, the police, and I was in that organization a long while ago, it's a call you really don't want to handle. You feel you're at a disadvantage. Police people, of course, the bottom line is it's a helping organization. They don't really want to go in there and have to use force on people, although that's what makes them different than other people. They're willing to, and they're armed to do it. So they would go, they would do the best they can, but the best they can is often not enough. We need to shift it again back to the people who have knowledge. This is not a field where we've got, at this point, a tremendous amount of knowledge, but we have more, certainly more, than we had in 66 and 68 and with some of the major deinstitutionalization was going on.
I'm Errol Lewis of the Daily News, sitting in for Brian. I'm talking with Eugene O'Donnell, a professor of law and police science at John Jay College. Professor, surely there's still a role for the police, and I say that because one of the cases we listed in our paper was Matthew Galata, who's a gun dealer, who last year this was in my neighborhood, in fact, shooting at red cars because demons told him he was being followed by members of the Bloods gang. Now, that's surely not something that a psychiatrist is going to defuse.
No, and that's absolutely correct. And, you know, there has to be a balance. I think humane and a decent approach is what drives the whole thing. But obviously, and a sensitivity, a profound sensitivity towards civil liberties. But also, there is going to have to be, and the panel, hopefully, if they're up and running, will have to wade through these issues. There has to be a need to protect you and your community and everyone else in the city so that that people are not harmed. Some of these cases are quite dramatic and quite awful. But even the ones that don't make the front page of the Daily News are fraught with danger. And if you talk to cops again, some of these are really narrow. We narrowly avert crisis. The police narrowly avert crisis almost on a daily basis. A horrible outcome in some of these things.
I'm going to open up the phone to callers. If you've had an encounter, either with or without the police involved, where you or a neighbor have witnessed people in emotional distress being brought back from the edge of violence or maybe going over the edge of violence, give me a call. 212-433-9692 is the number. That's 433-WNYC. Are there still civil liberties issues involved, Professor?
Absolutely, and if New York City is a model, that's the model we should be. But, you know, unfortunately, if you talk to prosecutors, a lot of what's happened is that we've kind of narrowly defined the issue of insanity and that basically we've really the criminal justice system's become sort of a catchment for mental health, drug, and alcohol addiction issues, and that's not a very enlightened approach in this day and age to be locking people up. And it's not, by the way, just in New York. Just checking out the Billings Gazette in Montana, and the story there a couple of days ago, the top story there was how their prison system is overflowing with the mentally ill. So this is reform that really needs to be started. And again, New York City once upon a time led the way. This particular mayor, I think, is extremely well-suited to do this kind of work because it's the kind of unexciting, you know, get down in the pit, roll up your sleeves problem-solving that I think he has done a quite a good job on, whether it's child welfare or education or housing and the homeless. Not a one-size-fits-all, not a panacea, but looking at how to tweak the system perhaps, a little bit of change here, a little bit of change there, then in the long run prevents some of these tragedies and gives as many people in the city a good life as possible who suffer under these illnesses.
We started out talking about there being 70,000 calls a year that the NYPD handles involving emotionally disturbed persons. How does that stack up to other calls? I mean, is this a drain on police resources to have to handle these?
It is, because they can be extremely time-consuming. And, again, I can tell you when that call comes across, it's a call. You know, very often they're diffused relatively without incident. But it is one that really raises you up because you're there. If you're in somebody's home, there's often family members around, and you know they're concerned about the safety of the person. You're bringing weapons into the room, so the one sure thing you can be sure of when you're there as a police officer is there may not have been weapons there before. There are now. You have to make sure you hold on to those weapons, and then often the cops will have to escort people to the hospital and stay with them in the hospital. And if there's one sure place that police people don't want to spend big parts of their tour, it's hanging around psychiatric hospitals and dealing with all the issues they have to deal with there. So they can be extremely time-consuming and extremely dangerous. And by the way, some of the police departments in the country that come under the most serious criticism for shootings and deadly force incidents, witness the case now in Phoenix at the airport with Ms. Gottbaum. Those are the outgrowth of these, or the one of the byproducts of these kinds of events.
Elaine from Queens, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks. I'm a visiting nurse, and I am frequently in the homes of various patients, and sometimes I have to call an ambulance. And the way that I do that is call 911. If I indicate at all that there's any kind of emotional distress or any kind of confusion or any kind of mental problem with a patient at all, then automatically, in addition to the ambulance coming, whatever local ambulance in whatever borough I happen to be in, the police come as well. I don't understand why a person on the street or even the family can't call 911 and ask for an ambulance or family member and indicate that they're, you know, that the family member is having a mental health incident that needs attention.
Does the presence of the police make things worse or more tense?
Well, that's an interesting subject, because actually a lot of times the ambulance people make things tense. They're sometimes not very well versed in how to approach people, and they boss people around and make them more upset, which is interesting. But no, I said the police are there because if there's any kind of out of control situation, they're there to control it. And I don't have any control over whether or not they show up. Sometimes I wish they wouldn't, because it does upset the patient more. And I didn't mean to indicate on the phone, for example, that the patient, you know, needed that much attention, but they decide to come when they decide to come. Sometimes the ambulance people just show up themselves, and sometimes the police are there. If they indicate it's a cardiac incident, then the police will be there. But what I don't understand is, with the current system that we have place, why someone couldn't have called 911 and said, I need an ambulance for this family member or this person on the street. If I saw somebody on the street that I thought was seriously having an incident and needed to be hospitalized, I wouldn't hesitate to call 911 and ask for an ambulance. And the police would show up in order to help control the person if that was needed. Obviously that's frequently the case with mentally ill people.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much for your call, Elaine. Marilyn from Manhattan, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. I have two related questions for your guest. The first is whether he knows if the police are instructed to shoot to kill, or if that is a presumed accident. And also, why can't they use tranquilizing darts rather than bullets in cases like this? And I can
Professor?
Take the answer off the air.
Okay,
sure.
Thank you.
Well, we'll start with the second one first. This is, again, one of the things that we should be pushing for, and maybe this panel can take this up, and your first caller had some very interesting observations, but this is also one. Why don't we have non-lethal, weaponry that's reliable in this day and age? We have the best that we've been able to do so far, for the most part, has been the taser, and, of course, that has all kinds of controversial aspects to it. So that is something that needs to be on the national agenda, non-lethal force for people. And as to the second point, certainly in the New York City Police Department, the police are instructed not to shoot anyone except under the most dire circumstances, where their lives or somebody else's lives are in imminent risk of death. And that's why police shootings in New York City are virtually, you know, there's virtually none of them every year. And when you have them, there's usually involved armed people. But, of course, one of the complexities with mental health is we now have this, we have a phenomenon called suicide by cop, in which sometimes people wave weapons at police people, and police officers are forced to kill them. One in Nassau a while back, the guy left a note saying sorry to the police that I had to do this. He didn't apparently want to kill himself, so he had the police do it. But the first and second caller raise, I think, several issues that could go right up front on the agenda for this blue ribbon panel.
Norman from Manhattan, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, very good program. This panel that the New York Daily News has proposed is a very interesting idea, but I think these things have been done before. My question is, how much would it cost to treat mental health patients in a good system? And my understanding is that it is enormously expensive. And last year, the New York Times did a series on diabetes. They figured out how to treat diabetes patients in ways that would save limbs being amputated, in ways that would save their lives, and it would cost $10,000 a year per diabetes patient. They can't get the money. There were several diabetes programs in New York City that were set up that were excellent state-of-the-art programs, and they had to close down because they were losing money for the universities that set them up. Wouldn't you have the same situation with mental health? The panel is going to recommend proposals. Treating seriously ill patients like schizophrenics is very expensive. It takes lots of professional time. It takes very expensive drugs. It takes housing. It's going to cost a fortune. And the city has demonstrated that it's not willing to pay the money for things like this.
Okay, no, that's a very good point, Norman. And let me adjust the question just a little bit for Eugene O'Donnell. Professor, are there other jurisdictions around the country that have sort of gone through this blue ribbon approach and come up with a reasonably comprehensive system for dealing with the emotionally disturbed?
There are a lot of good ideas on the table, and I think it's a mistake to assume that we're looking for a complete fix that's going to make this problem go away. That's not in the cards anytime soon, but we have cities with mobile crisis teams. May not work in New York. I don't think the police commissioner is a big fan of this idea, but the idea of mental health people sort of being the first responders with the police waiting in the wings if necessary so that you actually have professionals down on the ground. I think the whole issue with the Blue Ribbon panel is the charge you give it and how much optimistic you want to be and how large the charge could be. But it certainly seems that there could be many, many changes made that might actually save money or at least not be very costly. Some very small changes to things. For example, if you talk to cops, they'll tell you every hospital they go into, they feel like there's a different protocol. There doesn't seem to be any uniformity. Your first caller talked about one of your callers talked about calling the police and family members. A couple of things on there. One is sometimes the family members are not willing to call the police because they're worried that the police will make things worse, unwittingly make things worse. And the second thing is a campaign of education of family members and us in general, we in general, the people of the city, about what mental health is and that it's an illness might actually help if we had a program of a comprehensive program with family members telling them if a person goes off their meds, this is what you should do. And perhaps you may have to take more responsibility in those cases if you possibly can do that.
I want to sneak in one more call. David from Maplewood, you have to make it real fast.
I'm an elected official in Maplewood. We recently had an incident where our police shot and killed a mentally ill man brandishing a knife. And I would like your comment both on notification and privacy issues and on what small towns or what small jurisdictions like neighborhoods can do if they know of a mentally ill person in the neighborhood.
Professor?
I think that's the question, and I would not presuppose that I could provide a definitive answer. Obviously, you know, one of the things that's overlooked here is the police officers individually have to take a life, and I've never met a police officer who wants to go on the job to kill somebody, and the fallout onto that individual officer is going to be extraordinary, and it's often overlooked in this conversation that there's no easy solution, so we won't look for a solution, so we'll make the police a solution. That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense in the long run.
And we're at the start of a conversation. This won't be the last time, I'm sure, we'll talk about this, but we'll have to leave it there for now. Let me thank you very much for coming on with me this morning. Eugene O'Donnell, Professor of Law and Police Science at John Jay College.
Thank you, Errol.
Coming up, we will get to why Fresh Direct warehouse workers are now locked in a labor dispute.